The voice you are about to hear belongs to a fictional character. The events do not. They are unfolding across Northwest today. This is Ryan's story. Ryan wanted to retrain as a transport planning technician in one of the most deprived constituencies in England, where crumbling connections between towns hold back entire communities. The skills existed, the need was urgent, but every institution he approached cited the same reason for turning him away. Here is what he discovered when he started asking why.
I'm Ryan, 32, and I've spent most of my adult life building things. Left school at 16 to start a construction apprentice scheme, and for 8 years after that, I was laying tarmac and pouring concrete across Greater Manchester. There's something satisfying about infrastructure work, knowing that the bridge you built or the road you resurfaced will carry people for decades. When my firm got made redundant in 2016 after the infrastructure spending cuts hit, I thought it was temporary. Construction always has its ups and downs. But this felt different. The work wasn't coming back, not properly. I started looking at what the region actually needed, and it was obvious. Better transport connections. You live in Middleton. You know how hard it is to get anywhere without a car. The bus routes don't line up, the train service is patchy, and forget about cycling infrastructure. I had 8 years of construction experience. I understood how infrastructure gets built, and I thought, this is my chance to retrain into something that could actually fix these problems. Transport planning seemed like the perfect fit. I applied to Hopwood Hall College first. They'd been running a transport planning course for years, and it had a decent reputation. I filled out all the paperwork, wrote my personal statement explaining my background and why I wanted to switch sectors. 3 weeks later, I got a phone call. "I'm sorry, Mr. Thompson," the administrator said, "but we've had to suspend that program. There's been a reduction in government funding for vocational education, and we simply can't afford to run it this year." She sounded genuinely apologetic. I asked if there was any chance it would restart next year. "We hope so," she said, "but it depends on the funding situation." Fair enough, I thought. Budgets are tight everywhere. I started looking at other options. Transport for Greater Manchester had a graduate scheme that looked promising. It wasn't exactly what I wanted, but it would get me into the sector. I spent 2 days polishing my application, highlighting my construction background and local knowledge. The response came back within a week. "Thank you for your interest in our graduate program. Unfortunately, recruitment has been frozen indefinitely. The Department for Transport has cut our capital investment budget by 40%, and we're not in a position to take on new staff at this time." That stung more than the college rejection. This wasn't just about training courses. This was about the actual organisations that plan transport not hiring people. But I kept going. Network Rail had a training centre in Manchester, and they ran apprenticeship programmes for people who wanted to work on the railways. I'd built bridges. Surely I could learn to maintain railway infrastructure. I called them up and got through to a manager called David. He was brilliant. Actually listened to what I was trying to do, understood my background. "Look, Ryan," he said, "I'd love to take you on. You've got exactly the kind of experience we need. But Treasury spending rules mean we can't expand our apprenticeship numbers. There is no funding for additional places this year." I thanked him and put the phone down. 3 rejections, 3 different institutions, all giving me the same line. "There is no funding." It sounded reasonable. Everyone was saying the same thing. The government was tightening its belt. Departments were making difficult choices. Training programs were being cut. I understood that, or I thought I did. The following week, I was walking past the Network Rail Training Centre on my way to sign on at the job centre. It's a big building, modern, set back from the road with a decent-sized car park. And that car park was nearly empty. Maybe 20 cars in a space that could hold 200. I stopped and looked through the windows. Most of the training bays were sitting unused. I could see expensive simulation equipment covered in dust sheets, workbenches with no one at them, computer terminals with blank screens. That's when something clicked. David had said they couldn't expand their apprenticeship numbers because of Treasury spending rules. But the building was there. The equipment was there. The space was clearly there. What exactly was it that there is no funding for? The building was already paid for. The equipment was already installed. If they took on more apprentices, what additional cost would there actually be? Maybe some extra materials, maybe an instructor's wages. But the core infrastructure for training people was sitting there idle. I started thinking about my street. 7 of my neighbours used to work in construction or engineering. There's Mark from 2 doors down, who used to install electrical systems in new builds. Sarah from across the road, who was a site manager before her company folded. Tom next door, who spent 15 years as a crane operator. Now Mark stacks shelves at Asda, Sarah drives for Amazon, and Tom's on 0 hours contracts with a cleaning company. All of them have skills that would transfer to transport planning or railway maintenance. All of them are looking for something better than what they're doing now. The people exist. The building exists. The equipment exists. The need exists. I've seen the state of the transport connections in this area. Anyone who lives here knows we need better planning, better maintenance, better everything. So what exactly is it that there is no money for? That's when I started to understand something I'd never questioned before. When David said Treasury spending rules prevented them from taking on more apprentices, he wasn't talking about some natural law. He was talking about a decision someone made. When the Department for Transport cut transport for Greater Manchester's budget, that was a choice. When the government reduced funding for vocational education, that was a choice. The government that issues the pound notes told me it couldn't find enough pound notes to train people who were standing right there, ready to work, in a building that was already built, using equipment that was already installed. That's not an accounting problem. That's a political decision dressed up as an accounting problem. I used to accept the excuse that there was no money. I hear it differently now. The government that prints the notes and mints the coins told me it could not find enough of them to train the people who were standing right there, ready to work. The real question was never about money. It was about whether the people existed, whether the skills could be taught, whether the materials were available. They were. All of them. The excuse was not a fact. It was a choice wrapped in the language of impossibility. It is the same logic as a household that says we cannot afford it, except a household does not issue its own currency. The government does. The limit was never the money. The limit was the willingness to spend it into the places and the people who needed it. I'm still here, still watching, still asking questions. I understand now that this isn't just my story. It's the story of every constituency where people and needs exist side by side, while someone in Westminster says, the cupboard is bare. The cupboard was never bare. Someone just decided to keep it locked.
What Ryan experienced has a name, logical fallacy. A logical fallacy occurs when someone draws a conclusion using reasoning that doesn't actually support it. One common type is false analogy, where someone compares two things that seem similar but work in fundamentally different ways. It's like saying a goldfish bowl and the Pacific Ocean are the same because they both contain water, then trying to stock the ocean with goldfish. Every time Ryan was told there is no funding, someone was applying a false analogy. They treated the UK government's budget like a household budget, as though the Treasury needed to check its bank account before spending. But households don't issue their own currency. The UK government does. When a household runs short of pounds, it must earn more or borrow them from someone who has them. When the government runs short of pounds, it creates them. The constraint on government spending is not the number of pounds available, but the real resources those pounds can mobilise. People, skills, materials, time. In Ryan's case, those resources were sitting idle. The training centre had empty spaces, qualified instructors, unused equipment. 7 neighbours on his street had relevant skills but were underemployed. The Department for Transport applied household logic to a currency issuer, treating pounds as scarce when the real scarcity was political will. The resources existed, the people existed. The decision not to connect them was political, not financial. Heywood and Middleton North rank 68 out of 543 English constituencies for deprivation and sits in Decile 2, making it one of the most deprived areas in England according to the English Indices of Deprivation 2025 from MHCLG. The constituency has 613 registered charities according to the Charity Commission Register for England and Wales. Total grants received amount to £16.5 million, according to 360 Giving Grant Nav. All sources are published at blockedbritain.co.uk. Blocked Britain tells the stories of people whose lives are shaped by the gap between what Britain needs and what its institutions choose to provide. Every character is fictional. Every situation is drawn from official statistics. Produced by Blocked Britain.